You want to start recording?
I'm going to do it. There we go. Go.
Okay, so the topic this evening is learning how to give and to receive feedback. So this is a sort of a fascinating topic. I think the first thing to say really is that there's a bit of overlap with the previous topic we had for building leadership, which was all about stepping into hard conversations. This particular topic, personally, I find is it's such a helpful one for us as adults because, you know, we find it hard to give and receive feedback. So you can imagine our teens, you know, it's a new world for them. So we have to step into this gently and we're all learning. So, but I suppose the first thing is that we get feedback every day of our lives. We get feedback, we look for it. We don't look for other feedback, and we get it from friends. We get it from family. We get it from colleagues. You know, I'm sure you get it from customers if you're in that kind of job or in the workplace, your bosses, teachers, doctors, etc., strangers even. We're assessed, we're coached, we're criticized about our performance, we're given feedback on our personality, on our appearances. So basically, feedback is any kind of information that we get about ourselves. And it's how we learn about ourselves. And I think that's the critical thing. It's how we learn about ourselves. And that's why it's so important that we're trying to learn from it, how to give it and receive it well. And that's how we learn for life, you know. And in today's workplace, I'm sure many of you could probably say more about this than I can, but feedback plays a critical role in developing talent, improving morale, in aligning teams, solving problems, boosting the bottom line, whatever you have. And also when people are asked to list their most difficult conversations, feedback always comes up. So I was reading a recent study and it was like 55% of respondents in the study said that they felt their performance reviews were inaccurate, you know, and then 1 in 4 employees dread their performance reviews more than anything else in their working lives. So that's, you know, as I said, if us as adults find it difficult, well, you know, let's get ready for our teens, you know, because it's another world for them. I suppose the important thing at the outset always with these things is to remind ourselves how essential it is for our personal development and for healthy relationships. You know, in a relationship, it's about being able to take the feedback. You know, you know, that upset me, that annoyed me. Could you stop doing that? Why did you say that? Or whatever. And our teens don't know that it's essential. They not only dread it, they can often reject it, be very hurt by it. They don't understand it. They perceive it sometimes as a challenge to their identity. Somebody's telling them I'm a bad person, that I'm not good enough. And they can withdraw from the space of feedback quite easily. Whereas we need to help them to see it's none of the above, even when it's given badly, in fact. The book, there's a lot of stuff on this. I'm sure you've read much of it, but there's a great book called Thanks for the Feedback. I'll put it up on the bibliography. And it's really excellent. So we're going to look in this building leadership about why we find feedback so hard to take, and also providing a sort of framework and some tools really on that can help us sort of to digest challenging and sometimes maybe off being feedback, you know, because even that, you know, can fuel insight and can fuel growth. There's a big conversation out there about this thing about what's the important space in this, and what they call creating pull. It's this idea that mastering the skill required to help our teens to drive their own learning. Now that we're all the time trying to teach them that in the academic space, or you know, on the sports field, you know, in opportunities for leadership in the school and student council, whatever it is, you know, if it's their thing, you know, whatever their thing is, we're always encouraging them to step into that space. Socially, it's also a space that we're trying to encourage them to do. But in the social space, it's really important, you know, the full communication piece, which is obviously, you know, the coach, the teacher, the class teacher, and the parent, you know, parents. So helping them to manage their and recognize their resistance, you know, to feedback, how to engage with conversations with confidence, with curiosity, even when the feedback seems very wrong, you know, and to how to help them to find that insight. Also helping them to stand up for who they are, you know, and how they see the world. You know, how can they say the things without in a non-hurtful way, but clearly, And it's helping them to learn from the feedback that, as I said, is sometimes off base, unfair, badly given, and frankly, when they're not in the mood, helping them to even take that kind of feedback. So, as I said, feedback seeking behaviour is something that's actively encouraged in the workplace. It leads to higher job satisfaction, greater creativity, faster adaptation into different roles, lower turnover, and even seeking negative feedback is seen to actually increase performance ratings. So it's all about the feedback. So we all get it. We all know we need it. We need to try to help our teams to see that this is a space for learning, because we don't see ourselves as other people see us. And it's a space they can learn and grow in. It's the basis of healthy relationships among their peers, their siblings, and in future, you know, in a healthy and a happy, flourishing marriage, if that's where they go. And it's an essential part of growing up and maturing as a team. So the first thing really, I suppose the typical things that can happen is, you know, the types of feedback people get. You know, sometimes maybe your daughter comes home and is, you know, maybe a little upset because somebody said something into the class about, I don't know, what you put into a group chat. Like, why did you say that? That was stupid, you know, or something like that. And she takes offense because she was trying to be kind or whatever. And she comes home and she says, you know, that was so cruel. You know, everyone heard it. Why did she say it? You know, so there's a misalignment there. Somebody's trying to help her, you know, to see how maybe the comment she made was perceived by some other people. And she tried to help her not to do that again. And your daughter's thinking, but my intention wasn't to do that. Okay, so, you know, two totally different perspectives there. And, you know, in a more domestic setting, you know, somebody at home could say to somebody else, you know, I don't like the way those trousers look on you. And somebody can think, well, what do you mean? Is there something with them? Or is that a snide way of telling me I've put on more COVID pounds? You know, we can all pick it up a little bit wrongly. So usually when we're receiving the feedback, when our teams are receiving feedback, there's always something wrong with the way it's given. So the person who's giving it is doing it wrong. You know, that teacher doesn't like me, she doesn't appreciate the effort I'm putting in, or whatever. And the person who's giving it, you know, often says, well, the person receiving it isn't receiving it well. She doesn't know how to take constructive feedback, and I'm concerned. So usually, you know, there's two sides to every story, obviously. And of course, we tend to react badly, whichever, you know, no matter which end we are, or react, you know, it takes us a while sometimes to recoup. So some of the tools, I think, that we're trying to help, I suppose, to help our teams to step into the space of choosing feedback and being committed to it and be able to spot their own roadblocks. I think just at this juncture, it's also important with teams to make the distinction between feedback. You know, it's different to breaking ground rules. OK, so if a teen at home breaks a ground, you know, if you have a series of house rules and your team has broken it, you know, as parents, as adults, you know, you don't negotiate that. You don't kind of give her feedback. Look, since we that wasn't such a good plan the way you did that. She might give the feedback, but still the ground rule applies. You know, you bail there, I'm afraid, honey. So you're going to have to take the feedback, which is you need to do the bins this week. You need to take the dog. Everybody wants to take the dog out and walks these days. But, you know, there are consequences because you've broken a house rule. So that's not what feedback is about. Feedback can be part of that conversation, but you're not renegotiating your house rules. That's helpful. Why do our teams tend to take feedback badly? Well, you know, we could say the same for ourselves in all of this. So that's always helpful. They hear the words, they understand the words, but they don't understand the purpose of the feedback. So, and as a result, they judge the intentions of the person giving the feedback. So the typical thing, and I think it came up in the hard conversations the last time we were looking at, you know, the classroom, you know, teacher might say, look, look, that result, like, it's disappointing. What went wrong there? And your daughter's thinking, I worked really, really hard for that exam, you know, and they're devastated. You know, she doesn't like me. How could she say that? You know, and of course, what's happening there is, you know, so she's thinking she finds me annoying or whatever, and they react badly and they choose to ignore it, or they get upset, or they take a back seat in that subject. You know, the subject doesn't get the same attention. They're a bit moody about it. Their performance is compromised. That's an example. You know, they just misinterpret the feedback. Whereas the teacher's thinking, you know, God, she's great. I'm just going to tell her everything. She's not going to tell her all the stuff that's going well, and maybe she should have. But what she's doing is she's telling her, look, do you know what? You could focus in on this, this, and this. you know, and all, and what can happen to us in feedback, of course, is all we ever hear is the negative. Isn't it true? You know, if we get feedback, we don't hear the positive stuff. Unless, of course, it's all positive, in which case it's wonderful to hear it. The second reason is it's poorly timed or it's badly given and they're not ready for it. And that's called the human story. You know, how often have we given feedback that was badly timed, badly given, and frankly, like the novel Emma, badly done Emma. Do you know what I mean? Wrong, off course, off beam. And maybe your daughter's in a difficult moment and the person giving the feedback could be a peer, doesn't know that. And so they tend to focus on the circumstances, you know, that should never have happened, you know. And I think the important thing there is to realize that nobody is your daughter. And no matter how hard somebody tries, nobody is her. So the feedback will never suit perfectly, you know, because there could be flaws in how it's delivered. So the secret of maturing is that amazing ability to step into that space of growth and go, look, I hear the good bits that you're saying. You know, how often has that happened is maybe in a work situation, you're just given feedback after, you think, God, that wasn't maybe the most helpful. I didn't know that so-and-so was, had just got feedback from somebody else that day, or I didn't know, you know, at home, maybe, you know, they've broken up with their girlfriend. That wasn't a good moment. Gee, I didn't know that. So you might have done it differently. But how impressed we are if a colleague or a peer or somebody working in that, on our floor comes back and says, thanks for that. That was great. And go, wow, what character, what strength, what maturity. And we're trying to build that in our teams. And I think in all of this is as caring adults, the challenging thing sometimes if it's interpersonal feedback they're getting from their peers is to step out of the space of the hurt of our team and realize I, as an adult, have to future-proof my team. I can't go in swatting the weeds. They have to be able to make their own way here. They have to be able to be able to go, okay, and I go through something we do with them in the classroom, actually. It's called the ABC method, which is quite helpful, actually. But in any event, that's something that can go quite badly wrong for them if they're not in the space or it's badly given. Another reason, of course, is why we all hate getting feedback, don't dislike it sometimes, is because we love getting, you know, feedback which is positive. We love to learn, and our teams do mostly. They like to learn stuff about, you know, mountains or maths or, I don't know, history or, I don't know, French or Spanish or cookery. But learning about ourselves, something that I need to grow in, about me personally, isn't easy. And that's where the blind spots appear. And they don't often have the tools for that. And I suppose we don't know the tools to take the good from the feedback, and our teams don't either. So learning in spite of the fear, you know, and we can learn this skill, you know, our teams can learn this skill is, even though I'm afraid of the feedback I'm going to get here, you know, it could be in a peer situation, you know, where somebody was best friends with, you know, this group in first year and second year, you know, they practically dressed the same, looked the same, had the same bands, etc. And then all of a sudden in third year, it falls apart because Irish college happened. Somebody met a nice boy and before we know it, it's imploded. And your daughter's out of that group, or she feels out of the group. So what happens there? And that's encouraging. And we've had some lovely examples in the school, you know, of where some teens can manage to step into that space of, look, you know, what's the story? Or even just sometimes being able to go, look, we've all moved on, so that's okay. You know, so in a different, you know, so it's just, there's different obviously situations there, but it is impressive to see how teens can sometimes step into that space of, you know, being able to have frank conversations with their peers and go, look, what went wrong there? Did I say something? Did I hurt you? I didn't mean to. Let's try to be mature about this. They can learn how to manage their emotions there. They can learn to hear what the person is trying to say as opposed to what they are interpreting as being heard. And I think that's a really important one to remember. You know, we don't know the intentions of anybody. In fact, intentions are written in the heart and mind. And the only way we know intentions is somebody actually chooses to reveal them. And we presume we know somebody's intentions. You know, our teens do. She hurt me. She said that. She doesn't like me. She's mean. And they jump from, they interpret straight away. Whereas it could be somebody going, she doesn't like me, so I'm standing back here. It could be a whole series of things. So they feel hurt. They feel slighted. They feel whatever. And they believe the other person is trying to hurt them. But of course, our thinking is so automatic in this. In our teens, as we know, because of the frontal cortex, late development goes straight from stimulus to response without any space of what actually happened here. What's the difference between fact and fiction? You know, what have I interpreted here? Have I put an intention on that person's actions, which I do not know for a fact? And that's important. And we've talked about that numerous times, but it is important. Oftentimes our teens find it hard to take feedback because I think it's a reflection on their identity. Whereas feedback is always a signpost. And it may be a signpost that's slightly skewed. You know, it's like any signpost, you know, the GPS slightly skewed. You know, these ones that send you into housing estates and send you around and around and around. Well, feedback can be a little bit like that. It's given badly, so it's not clear what you need to do with it. So what can happen to our teens is they
Maura, you're mute.
Did I just...
I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Nothing can take our teens out of that space of their uniqueness, okay? They're unique. There's no two versions of them. They're unique. So nothing anybody says should be able to take away that uniqueness of that beauty. You know, that they're infinitely loved and they're a unique, beautiful child of God. They'll always be precious. They will always be adored. So any feedback, no matter how it's given, we need to have our teens sort of create that buffer, that emotional buffer, to be able to go, even if it's badly, if it's feedback that was intended to compromise their identity, our teens need to develop that resilience to go, not taking that, because that's frankly not helpful. But the golden rule they should never forget is that you can always get something, even something small from feedback, that on the initial face can look like bad feedback that's badly given. And if we miss out on it, if our teens miss out on it, they're the ones missing out ultimately. So why is feedback so important? Well, without it, we can't grow. We know that our teens can't grow without it. We can't see ourselves objectively. That's the story of the human condition. If we don't get feedback on our subjects in school, if they don't get feedback on the sports field, if they don't get feedback in their relationships, if they don't get feedback on anything from the way they speak in a debate, the way they pronounce a word in French, well, they can't grow. They don't know where their starting point is. And without personal feedback, it's like a conveyor belt. And none of us are on a conveyor belt. We're all unique. And we need to get that personalized feedback. Our teens are involved in giving and receiving it. Otherwise, we stay like the toddlers on the inside, you know? And it's worth trying to help our teens all the time, learn those skills, step into that space all the time. So the next point, I suppose, is what are the tools needed to learn to receive feedback well and to give it well? And the first one is understanding types of feedback and the purpose. Okay, and this is kind of sort of semi-fascinating. And I always like, the sports field is a really handy one for this. There are three kinds of feedback. The first one is appreciation. The second is coaching. And the third one is evaluation. Okay, so appreciation is, and they all serve totally different purposes. So the appreciation, we're thinking of the coach, you know, the basketball coach, okay? So the appreciation is basically where the basketball coach is motivating and encouraging. Okay, so he's there, you know, during the match. Come on, girls, you know, nice shot, keep it up. Good girl, that's great. Do more of that, do more of that, do more of that. It's encouraging, it's appreciation. Keep doing what you're doing. The second kind of feedback is coaching. And I suppose about the first type of feedback, anyway, second is coaching. So the coaching is helps you improve. So it's the same basketball match, okay? And it's the same coach, but it's the coach who's basically before the match going, girls, now listen, don't forget what we talked about. Do you remember the last match? Defense, hear me. Do you remember? So-and-so, don't forget with the basket. I'm not into basketball, so forgive me if you are, but, you know, I like watching. But, you know, don't forget this. Don't forget that. Don't forget to call each other out. Don't forget the other. Watch so-and-so, mark her. You know, so it's specific and it's based on, you know, how are we going to ace this game? Okay. So it's a pep talk. Then the evaluation is after the match. Okay, now it's not necessary straight after the match, if particularly if it's been a failed match. Well, you know, let's say it's never a failure. In fact, the failures can be the best matches ever. But typically it can be the match where it didn't do so well. You know, they lost the match. The coach helps the team to understand where, you know, what went wrong and what was expected. But it's after the commiseration. Listen, guys, don't worry. You did your best. That was a tough game. He says what she says what you can say within what happened without telling any lies. But then afterwards, the evaluation might come when they've had a chance to sort of, you know, get themselves together. And it could be the next, you know, training says, let's have a look at this. What went wrong here? You know, after the game, you know, what were the strengths? What were the weaknesses? What could we have done better? You know, how are we going to refocus our training? You know, so it's not literally straight after the failure, but it's going to be to refocus and to build. So different types of situations calls for different kind of feedback. Sometimes it's appreciation, you know. It could be, you know, sometimes it's the coaching, and sometimes it's the evaluation. And sometimes what can happen is our team needs a appreciation. She's given it socks. She's given such a great game, and maybe, you know, you're the parent who's really the sports enthusiast. And the first thing you say to her, listen, how did you miss the 5 baskets? What were you thinking? And she's devastated. She can't take it. Of course she can't, because what she needs right then is appreciation. Listen, love, you did your best. You know she did your best, but you could have, you know, but you don't give more. You don't give coaching there. The coaching can come in when, what can happen is you see our team sometimes pushes into the space of coaching. So they kind of go, yeah, but that wasn't good enough. Dad, that wasn't good enough. You know it wasn't good enough. I could have done better. That's, stop giving me, flattering me. You know that. So dad is doing all the appreciation. He goes, yeah, it's true. You didn't really do so well. And then it's, whoa, emotional outbursts. That, how could you say that? Tears in the car. And dad's completely, what did I do wrong? I gave her the appreciation. It wasn't enough. And now I've given her the coaching. And I'm the boogeyman. Like, how, you know, what do I do? I don't understand, girls. What's wrong, love? I'm not doing these conversations anymore, or whatever it is. And that's because we need to teach our teens is don't go looking for feedback you're not ready for, you know? And that's a learning space. And we need to know too, as adults, going, she's not ready for it. Don't give it to her, love. Don't give it. It'd be blood on the walls. Don't give it. And then the evaluation. The evaluation needs to come at different stages. And sometimes, again, our teams want the evaluation, but they're not really ready. You know, they want to, you know, typically in a friendship situation, you know, there's been a bit of an upset. And they go in saying, yeah, I really want this friendship, mom. So I want to tell you what I'm going to say. And I really want this friendship. And then the friend says, it doesn't quite start off with, I want the friendship. Is you hurt me because you said that. And that was mean. And then our team isn't able for that. And maybe the other team says things, maybe they're put a little bit bluntly. But our team, as adults there, we need to prepare them for, look, when you step into the space of that kind of evaluation, you need to be ready for things you don't like. Because of course, to hear that you're not perfect and that maybe you said something that you did not intend to be hurtful. You're not telling your daughter, or not telling any of the girls in school, listen, you're a bad girl, you're not. You didn't intend to be hurtful, but somebody else was hurt by that. You know, because maybe a teen is a little bit more direct and she goes, look, I just want to say, I want to be honest. She's saying, mom, I have to be honest. I have to tell her things because otherwise I'm being dishonest and I'm being sly and I'm not being straight. I'm going to be honest. Whereas her friend is gentle and meek and sensitive. And it's like as if she's had a tsunami. So she can't deal with that level of what she perceives as sort of aggression or, you know, I just can't deal with it. So it's understanding, helping our teams to appreciate feedback means different things in different circumstances for different people. And that's all about learning how the world isn't made of little me's. It's made of many, many, made of me and many, many others. And that's why it's such a rich space to be in. But anyway, I think those are all helpful ones for us to sort of reflect on. And we always learn from the bad ones, don't we? Unfortunately. But anyway, and there's always a lovely word called sorry, which we can all say frequently. Secondly, is understanding the intentions of the person giving the feedback before our team gets defensive. So now what happens here, of course, is emotions are the name of the game. So usually this space is a bit of a luxury, let's be honest. Okay, this can happen in sixth year. Okay, it's wonderful to see. And what's lovely is... as parents, you'll get to see this in college. You know, you get to see this when they're in college or in their first job. But, you know, and we just have to step into that space with them all the time. You know, it's wonderful. You know, keep thinking, you know, see that daughter of yours when she's in college and she's sorting out a tiff with friends, or when she's having that conversation with a lecturer who's just, you know, not the best giving feedback and she's well able to take it. And, you know, it's edifying to see it. Or she's in a job with a boss who's, you know, maybe that bit difficult and she can manage that relationship. You know, that's what we're thinking about in these things, apart from obviously trying to help them to have very flourishing relationships in school and feedback situations. But it's really important to think this is a long-term plan here. But anyway, I suppose encouraging our team, okay, to look for points in the feedback, the key points in the feedback, okay? So I'll give you an example that isn't team related. And it could be if your team has got a provisional license, if she's an older team, but maybe we can relate to this. You know, you remember that time you were learning to drive and your father, who was given the task, said to you, "You're a desperate driver. You're a reckless," he says, "you're a reckless driver." Okay, this was day one of learning. And that's it. History, never going to happen again. Mom can't deal with that. Never happening again. And what's happening? We just totally ignore the feedback. But maybe what Dad was saying there was, not your bad driver, but every time you're in the car with you, you take out the mobile phone. Now, of course, the mobile phone doesn't exist really in our day, but it does exist in our teens' day. It would be really helpful if we actually dig into that comment and said, "Well, look, what do you mean by I'm a reckless driver? You know, I just mean you have your phone out all the time, love. Oh, okay. Well, that might save a few car accidents, you know, or it could save losing the provisional, or it could save being pulled over by a guard, or it could save points on the license." So it's really important that we, you know, obviously that feedback is double clicked on and understood. What are you intending by it? Because feedback can mean obviously very different things to different people. You know, in that situation, the person giving the feedback is going, "Get rid of the phone, would you?" And the person receiving the feedback is going, "You are telling me I'm a bad driver forever. And that's just dominant." So our teens, I suppose, what we're trying to help them to do is to learn that other people's opinions are valuable, especially when they've access to information that they don't have, you know, in the case of an adult or another peer or whatever it is, and using this information to their advantage. Don't just ignore it, helping them to think objectively, you know, because we can't think objectively for ourselves, you know. It's difficult to see ourselves clearly. We all need to see our blind spots, you know. We don't see ourselves the way other people do, you know. You know, for example, you know, a typical thing, somebody impersonates you. You know, our team, it can happen, siblings. "You always do this all the time," and see how our team takes it, you know. Now, you know, typically siblings, you know, get away with saying it very directly and bluntly, but encouraging, you know, our teams to go, "Well, no, you shouldn't have said it like that to the other team. That's not helpful. But, you know, maybe there's something in it," you know. And that can be the first training ground, obviously, because that's in sort of a safe space, as it were. So again, I suppose a typical thing can happen is somebody, you know, maybe our team's trying to be friendly with somebody in the class and they sort of just discovered her, you know. So they try to smile and be friendly, and it's not like, you know, immediate, the result, you know. And they're upset by that, saying, "Well, you know, I've got to be friendly to her and she just gives me the cold shoulder. That's terrible. She's being mean." And we can either step into that and go, "Well, objectively, you know, she is trying to be friendly." But we don't know is that maybe for the last 2 years, you know, our team hasn't noticed that girl and all of a sudden decides that she thinks she'd like to be her friend. But of course, friendship takes a while. So just because we want to befriend somebody doesn't mean necessarily they're ready for that friendship. So, or, you know, as I said, you know, depending how, you know, we can all interpret things differently, say things differently. We can blame circumstances, which can be the problem. Other people, of course, are more likely to blame us. You know, if someone complains our teams are friendly, we'll probably find an excuse for it, naturally, because we could be the coach or we could be their parent and we know them and we know they didn't intend it. But sometimes we too, the ones to kind of help them to go, "Okay, well, look, maybe she said it badly, but maybe, is there, you know, and as she needs help with that. But what can you do about it?" And that's a really important thing for us to try to do. we tend to judge ourselves by our intentions, and we tend to judge others by their actions. And that's an important point. You know, remember, if you give an, if somebody gives somebody an insincere smile, you know, the other person might think, well, there's another insincere smile. Whereas, and because they interpret that, or they previously, the smile was never intended to win their friendship. And so it depends on what end of the feedback you're receiving it, whether you interpret the action or you interpret the intentions. But I suppose we all tend to view ourselves more positively than maybe we are. And using feedback to learn from our blind spots is really the important thing there. So helping our teens, as I said, to distinguish between intentions, don't always attribute intentions to actions. It could mean something different for different people. And also helping our teens not to step into the space of giving feedback when they're very emotional or angry, because that's a wrong space to give it, because they're just too heated. And that's where it's good that they would, you know, help them to calm a little bit, to think, to do something else, think, to put that out of their minds for the moment, and maybe to practice the feedback with at home or with their coach if they're planning to give it, because, you know, that's important. Okay, the next one really is understanding relationships, the importance of relationships in feedback, because we don't take all feedback equally. So if we think the person who's giving the feedback is trustworthy and sincere, we can tend to take the feedback better. But of course, we might tend to take the feedback, we can reject the feedback, but that can also mean different things. It's just always the case, you know. Think of it, if a colleague at work, you know, our own situation, you know, if they're giving us feedback and you feel they want your job, well, you're going to be a little bit more suspicious of the feedback. Do they have the best intentions, you know? You might dismiss a best friend's advice about something because you think, what do they know about it? And the same way our teens can be the same, you know, a friend gives them advice that they think is wrong, and then they justify their rejection of the feedback by saying, well, they don't really know, you know, because they don't know the circumstances and they weren't there in the conversation and they don't know how mean how she looked when she said those words. So, you know, we can easily reject all kinds of feedback because of the relationship that we have with the person. Those judgments can be sort of counterproductive, and they can help us to sort of our teens to reject feedback that could be otherwise quite good. And again, I suppose feedback can put pressure on close relationships that our teens have. You know, they expect certain things from their relationship. They expect 100% appreciation, affirmation, almost flattery. Whereas the best of friends should be able to say things that are really more frank, more honest, because the relationship is there. And that's something we've to sort of, and that's what you know, good marriage is, as you know better than anyone, is that you can say things to your other half that nobody else can get away with because there's a relationship there that's unique. So I suppose it's giving our teens the sort of the permission to step away from that, you know, to grow apart, having them to go, well, look, maybe she didn't intend to hurt you, but she found it very hard to give that feedback because she cares for the friendship. And that's often the case. Often teens, when they have the courage to face each other with the situation that's a little bit challenging for both, they hear from each other, like, I only said that because I care about the friendship and I don't want anybody else saying, giving, you know, gossiping about you, you know, so I want you to know that, you know, there is something you could improve that could prevent that. So it's different, but of course feedback, of course, and that sort of can feel threatening to our teen. And they can say, well, she's just trying to control me, or she's just trying to improve me. And of course, that's not necessarily the case. Relationships, again, can create tension for giving and receiving feedback, because people are simply different. You know, from the lockdown, you know, we all like to relax differently. You know, you see it at home. Somebody wants to do the dishes straight away. Somebody else wants to relax over dinner. Somebody else, whatever. Somebody wants to watch this Netflix, somebody else doesn't, somebody else, whatever it is. Somebody likes a bit of quiet time, somebody just likes to talk, and there aren't that many spaces to do both simultaneously at the same time. So tensions rise. So sometimes we have to sort of take a step back and help our teens see what influences the relationship, and help them sort of see, well, look, are there little behaviors there that just are, you know, they're fine for you, but there's other people here and they react differently and they need a bit more space, or we've got an exam today, or they've got this, they've got that. And of course, if our teens don't know what their peers are going through necessarily, most of them tend to, though, in fairness to them, they can sometimes not realise that somebody's under pressure. So this can create a bit of problems with communication. And I suppose what can happen is if a close friend suddenly gets, you know, this doesn't happen, but it could happen. You know, if two friends are, you know, the two friends are very similar and they do everything together. They go to drum together when they go to dress the same, the same bands, they do the same extracurricular and everything. And then all of a sudden somebody decides in third year or TY, they're going to do things differently. And they dye the hair over the summer. They love rock bands. Justin Bieber's got the ditch. And all of a sudden they've become a little bit mad. And our team is left a bit going, I don't know what to do about this, you know? And all of a sudden, the relationship's tricky, you know? She's getting the main part in school musical as well, and I didn't get any part. Or we never liked those books, and now she's reading these books. So they can feel very threatened by that, as opposed to seeing it as not a reflection on you. It's just called teenage sort of, you know, growing, and we all, you know, every teenager has a different teenage experience and it can change at different stages. So it's not necessarily about you. And again, this is about taking your teen out of that navel gazing space of, look, sweetie, you know, you need to step away from that. And that's never easy to hear, you know, but of course we all need to hear it. You know, and we all know, you know, if somebody in the class is a little bit more honest or direct or perceived as being aggressive in their feedback, and it could be because, you know, at home everybody's very direct and that kind of directness is encouraged, you know, maybe dad's in the army and I don't know, it's just like that. So it doesn't justify, you know, be, you know, feedback that's just a little bit too direct at all. It doesn't ever justify aggressive behavior, which would be objectively justified as that, but it gives, the key is understanding. You know, and we're all at different, we all need to sort of grow, none of us are perfect, so we're trying to grow into a space of, if we're a little bit too sensitive and too gentle, we need to sort of get a little bit more resilient and step into that space of being a little bit more outspoken to defend our position. And if we're always in the space of defending, well, maybe we need to listen a bit more and step back a little bit. So we're all growing in the process. So when listening to feedback, it's considering, I suppose, where that person's coming from, where their feelings are, what their feelings are towards you, and remember to take two steps back and look, are there things in this situation that I'm just not taking on board? And here's the ABC. I find this really easy. And Martin Seligman does it in his book, Learned Optimism, which is definitely a go-to. The first is, if there's a situation of adversity, in other words, feedback that didn't go well, okay? It's going, okay, this is challenging. Be able to name it, okay, challenging. What are the circumstances and what happened? Okay, she said this, or I said that, it didn't go down well, or teacher said the other, or dad said this, or whatever. This neighbor said the other, and ran me out of the driveway with the dog, whatever it is. It's identifying it to say, okay. The second thing is belief. So you often hear from the teenagers, they go straight from situation to belief, which is, she doesn't like me, she's mean, she raised the eyebrow, that wasn't fair. It's straight a valorization of the situation. And we sort of pull them out of that. Okay, because they've gone straight into maybe interpretation of an intention. They've got, maybe if they're particularly emotional at that moment, the emotions have gone, you know, have taken center stage and taken over any sort of reasoning or logic. So we have to pull them out of that. Now we have to think, ask them, well, no, let's challenge that interpretation, you know? Why do you think she said that to you? You know, particularly if a friend says, look, you know, wasn't good, but you go to the WhatsApp group, you know, I wouldn't put it that way. And maybe our team goes home and says, well, that was so artful. I just wanted to be kind. And she told me it was just not the thing to do. And I think they're all gossiping and ganging up against me. And you go, well, do you know that for a fact? Do you know they're ganging up against you? No. Do you know they don't like you? No. Who gave you feedback? Sally Ann. Well, she's your best friend. Why do you think she suddenly jumped ship? You know, feedback is sometimes, do you think there could be something you don't know? Creating, you know, question mark there. Do you know any of this for a fact? Did she say to you she didn't want to be your friend? Did she say that she do you know for a fact? Oh no, but you see the other girl, you see, in the class, who's best friends with her sister, who met her walking yesterday with the dog, said that so-and-so said about so-and-so, who then said about so-and-so. Before we know it, we have a situation which is like a cat with a ball of wool. It's just no beginning, no end. And there's so little fact and it's impossible to know what's going on. So we have to help them to go, okay, right, well, look, I'm not sure about all the facts. So let's challenge it, challenging the belief. And then also consequences. You know, in 6 days' time, in 6 weeks' time, in 6 months' time, where do you want to be with that friend who's giving that feedback? Do you still want to be her friend? Even if the feedback was given badly. Even if maybe she's finding your relationship challenging at the moment. Don't all friendships go through difficult periods? And even if the friendship is on the rocks, you know, maybe it is on the rocks. Maybe it's a time to part because you've both got very different interests right now. Not the end of the world either. Maybe you both need space. That's not a reflection on either of you. Maybe you just have naturally grown apart. You know, how many of us are still best friends with our sixth class friends? Can we even name some of them? You know, so it's just important to be able to help our team. So ABC, adversity, belief, and challenge the belief. Get factual. And then consequences. What do we want out of this? And then finally, of course, it's the whole brain wiring and emotions, okay? And I guess, of course, here, emotions really are fascinating. Because, of course, we've all different ranges of emotions, and our teams have too. And the more emotional that we tend to be, it's easy to observe it. Now, in fairness, as adults, as caring adults and as parents, this can be quite difficult. Because the hardest thing is, as parents, is watching our teams suffer. Okay, so what we want to do is just end the suffering right now. And stepping into the role as protector, defender, you know. But sometimes what we can do by stepping into that space is we're making our teams into children. And we're not helping them step from behind and step into the space and own it as rightfully their own. And I think that's really, really important for us to consider that. How much can my team manage on her own? Because that's very, very important. And I think that's important, and it's hard, it's challenging for, and that's why it's very important, you know, at home, whether it's mom and dad or, you know, whoever's at home, to have that conversation, you know, okay, what do we need to do about this? Because if one can get more emotional than the other, be more upset than the other because of the different time, you know, because of what, you know, each adult's person is going through or because of whatever. But in any event, we all feel bad emotions. Some of our teens are more optimistic than others. So, you know, they're kind of very happy-go-lucky. So it takes a lot of badly given feedback, or even they don't tend to notice it, which is actually a great bonus. But most teens tend to notice and be more sensitive towards any kind of feedback and interpret bad feedback for feedback that's actually quite straightforward. So in terms of emotions, I suppose the thing is we all get bad emotions and we feel them more strongly than good emotions. We have 70% more negative thoughts than positive thoughts, as Happy and Human would tell you. And that's because our brains are wired for survival, to pick up on threats, to help us to survive. So what we're trying to help our teens to do is establish a growth mentality, as a growth mindset, as we know, instead of a fixed mindset, Carol Dweck. And what can happen is in situations our teens perceive criticism. And then before we know it, they're angry, the tears start, they're upset. This is high judging. And it's kind of like, I'm no good. I'll never manage that subject. That teacher doesn't like me. I never really had a friendship there. They're all the things I've mentioned earlier. So what happens is because of the emotions, the negative feedback can threaten their identity. What we're trying to help them to do is to realize emotions are like little two-year-olds, little toddlers. And they're having their little tantrum here, and we're trying to help our teens to go, okay, I'm getting emotional here. I am going to try to put them to one side for a moment until I can calm them down. And sometimes they need space from the situation, because sometimes they need to talk about it. And then they also need to do something. You know, that's why a chore or helping putting out the dinner or doing some homework with a younger sibling or helping granny or whatever, all very good things because they're perspective building. Helps them step away from the emotions. And then we have to help them see, no, you're not a bad worker. You work very hard. We all know that. I saw you up to whatever time last night finishing that project. You are a good friend. You were yesterday, you went for a walk with her. You sent her a lovely birthday card this year, and et cetera. So let's not go there. And trying to create sort of spaces where our teams start developing healthy coping mechanisms not to go there. When something bad happens, we can't question everything. You know, we can't question everything. So it's like, you know, a couple having a domestic, you don't question the marriage. You go, okay, I'm having a bad moment here. You know, let's zoom out the lens here. Helping your teams know we can't question this. Instead, we're trying to help them to focus how to grow. And I suppose trying to help them to realize, you know, how can we improve through this? How can we learn from this? How can we put the emotions to one side here? Because otherwise what happens is blame. Stepping into blame and who made the mistake, you know, and apportioning blame. And that never works. It's never healthy, it's never happy, never resolves, and it creates a spiral of resentment. Okay? And that's not something, and resentment, as we know, is like, it's like self-inflicted wounds. It's like giving ourselves, injecting just toxins into our emotional well-being. It's never, ever, and we need to try to help our teams not to get into that space, you know, is, okay, hang on, step out of that. No, I'm not going there. It's not about who should apologize. It's not about who gets to be stubborn. It's not about, you know, it's who created the problem. No, it's how can we future-proof this? How can we turn this into something that's better for both of us? Because we all make mistakes. So nobody's perfect. So maybe somebody's feedback wasn't great. Maybe it wasn't given at the right moment, or maybe our team overreacted to it. That wasn't great. That's called human. It's allowed. Otherwise, we'd all be robots and we won't have meaningful, flourishing relationships because we won't know how to love, because the flip side of love is hurt, is suffering. We always suffer a little bit for those relationships because then we grow in understanding. And because we've gone through that suffering, you know, that emotional suffering with somebody, you know, we could trust them because we've come through it. And that's the deepest relationships are those when we've suffered with the person. So blame is about making judgments, and I suppose the only way forward really is, we're trying to say, is learning from mistakes, is understanding different perceptions, perspectives on the exact same reality, is knowing how to adjust our behavior for better results, all of this. So trying to help our team to go, yeah, maybe she did wrong. You're not responsible for that. The only thing you're responsible for is your reactions and what you can do, and not what your reactions means, but what you do with your reactions, you know. But what do you want to do about it? Do you want, you know, and encouraging the core values there, you know, it's kind of, well, loyalty, honesty, resilience, you know, this is where we get to act them out, you know, and it's not just well-being class, not the theory, it's the practice that we want. So applying, helping our teams to apply themselves to it, you know, and to get better at it, not just stepping into the space of learning for the parent-teacher meeting and going, yeah, I need to, you know, do the study as well as the homework, or I need to focus in on the pronunciation of this, or listen to the tapes of whatever, listen to the accents of, I don't know, Irish accent from the north of Ireland or whatever it is. That's great. That's kind of, you know, nothing to do with me personally. But stepping into the space of, you know, maybe you need to listen more, maybe you need to be kinder, maybe, you know, the hard conversations we looked at in the last building leadership, you need to step away. You know, it needs to be a few conversations. You're not going to achieve it all in one. So don't say everything you feel all up front, because maybe she's not able for it. Maybe you're not able for it. Maybe, you know, whatever. So it's creativity, it's compassion, it's confidence. We're trying to build here, and a positive attitude. And the ABC is really great for that, I think, really. So in summary, even though it sounds nearly every kind of feedback, whether we agree with it, whether we can take it or not, can be used to help us grow and help our teams grow. And the more we can understand the feedback with an open mind, the more we can develop. And when our teams learn to process feedback effectively, there'll be no limit to their personal development. And as we know, you know, I happen to do two programs, one with young adults, young women in the workplace, and it's all about learning leadership. And you know, often, you know, so often the speakers speak about what they're looking for in the workplace. And they say, I need people who have emotional intelligence. I need people who are resilient. I need people who are good team players. I need people who are able to take feedback. I need people who are catalysts for change, you know, to think outside the box. you know, and it's and this is what this is all about, you know. So when somebody gives us the feedback, knowing how to put ourselves into their shoes, and when we're receiving the feedback also, not just to step into the space of rejecting it, even if it's challenging. Considering perspectives, what's that perspective of that person? What are they aiming to do? You know, girls always surprise me, say, look, the teacher's on your side, she's on the same team. You know, she's giving that feedback. You know why? Because she thinks you can actually do even better than you're doing. That's a compliment. You know, they go, oh, all right, gee, I thought she was being mean. It's amazing. Or, you know, how they understand a role. What's the role here? You know, she's, you know, that teacher or that coach, she's not your best, though. She's just trying to help you be the best version of yourself. That friend, doesn't that friendship mean she gets to say stuff that nobody else gets to? Maybe all that affects what they're saying and how you feel about it. And remember, they're just one person giving you that one bit of feedback. You don't have to reevaluate your entire life because of one piece of feedback. You know, you just take the maybe the little 3% of the 97%, because maybe the 97% was off beam. But just get used to taking that little 3%. And building that sort of muscle all the time is building them into that space of leadership. So that's it. One error there.
Thank you.
Just to say, I don't know if Marie, is it a good time to say this now? I suffer.